Tonight at midnight in many parts of the country, Peter Jackson's The Hobbit: An Unexpected Journey begins screening. It's the first of three films Jackson has made based on J.R.R. Tolkien's much-beloved book, which was a precursor to Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, which Jackson also brought to film to huge acclaim. For those who need a reminder, The Hobbit tells the story of Bilbo Baggins, a respectable hobbit whose life is turned upside down when a wizard and 13 dwarves show up on his doorstep.
Go away and bother somebody else! There's far too many dwarves in my dining room as it is. If this is some blockhead's idea of a joke, I can only say it is in their poor taste.
But this is not a joke. The dwarves are on a quest to reclaim their home and treasure, which was stolen by a dragon decades earlier. And even though Bilbo is an unlikely choice, they ask him to sign on. His life and reputation changed forever. There were purists who had quibbles with how Jackson changed the books for his Rings trilogy. So how does the precursor fare? Joining us in the studio is our favorite Tolkien scholar, Michael Drought, professor of English at Wheaton College, also a reader of Elvish. Mike, nice to speak with you as always.
Nice to see you, or as those elves would say, Megovanen.
Well, see, there you go. Why do you think there's so much appeal? We have a sense of why, but how would you describe it?
I would say that Tolkien taps into some very, very deep cultural roots, and some cultural roots that had really been neglected in some ways. Elves, dwarves, dragons, monsters from the medieval or the Germanic past had sort of become passé or only relegated to children's stories when Tolkien came along. And then he reworked this material in such a way that it appeals to almost anyone in an English-speaking culture because the words and the ideas are tied in with the language.
Okay, well, what about the film? You went to see it. You like it with some reservations. We'll get to some of those later. But critics are saying, you know, this is one book. It's being stretched into three films. Is it being stretched too thin?
It didn't seem like it was stretched too thin to me. And the reason is because what Peter Jackson did in making this film was go to the appendices of The Lord of the Rings and look at what else was happening at the same time The Hobbit was happening. And he brought those storylines in. And a lot of those storylines are just skeletal, but they're connected to the great epic sweep of The Lord of the Rings. So it's The Hobbit, but it's The Hobbit plus all the other, not just backstory, but parallel stories and the sort of geopolitical events that were going on. And so in that sense, I don't think that's a real criticism of it. It works if you feel all the plot lines coming together.
But do you have to have seen and enjoyed Lord of the Rings and memorized every character to enjoy The Hobbit?
It can be just as fun either way. Either it's like, oh, now I see where that comes from, or you're just seeing
just
everything for
story.
The first time.
All right, good. Well, The Hobbit centers around Bilbo Baggins, played by Martin Freeman, who people might recognize from the British versions of Sherlock Holmes. He played Dr. Watson or The Office. In this scene, the dwarves give Bilbo Baggins a contract he has to sign if he wants to go on that quest with them to reclaim their home and treasure stolen by a dragon. Let's listen.
Give him the contract.
We're in.
Please.
We're off.
It's just the usual summary of out-of-pocket expenses, time required, remuneration, funeral arrangements, so forth.
Funeral arrangements?
Are those the words of Tolkien?
The way it works in the book is Bilbo says, I should like to know about things like remuneration and so forth and out-of-pocket expenses. Because what's going on in the book is there's this culture clash between the bourgeois world of the hobbits, pocket handkerchiefs and tea time and so forth, and the epic world of the dwarves, where in the epic world, you don't have a contract. You swear on a sword that I will revenge my father even if it takes 100 years, and then off you go. What Tolkien's doing in the book is sort of having those two worlds collide. That's not what happens in the film because the film is pretty much entirely in the epic.
Okay, so if you don't mind, if I could just take a little side trip from the film for a second.
Sure.
I'm sitting here listening to you and wishing that I could have your class in English. What is the importance of Tolkien in the canon? I mean, you know, obviously you teach this to your students. Why? What's so important about it?
There's a couple things. The first is that Tolkien really nicely complicates everything we think we know about literature and what's good literature. Because if you take anybody's definitions of what is good literature, oh, it's the human heart in conflict with itself or whatever, Tolkien fits that definition. And yet the literary establishment would say, oh, no, not Tolkien. There's no elves. I had a rule somewhere, no elves allowed.
But you mean in good literature?
In good literature, right?
Right?
I never saw the no-elf codicil, but it's clearly there, right? No dragons, no elves, and so forth.
Right.
So it's important to get them to complicate their ideas of literature. It's also a great bridge between all that medieval culture that was sort of dropped in the modernist age and then picked up. And then I think as we're looking back on it with a safer vantage point, in some ways, he's one of the only writers writing in the second half of the 20th century who's dealing with the biggest problems of the 20th century, the nature of evil, the problem of war. By putting it into this fantasy realm, he lets you consider really, really touchy issues without being partisan about it one way or the other. So he's very useful for students to read and to start to talk about this material.
Well, we'd always drive someone to a book, but back to the film version of the book. What is exciting, Tolkien fans, about this film, The Hobbit, is that we get to see the first meeting of Bilbo and the creature Gollum, who plays such a role in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. We want to hear a little of that scene. To set it up, Bilbo gets separated from the dwarves on their adventure. He falls into an underground cave. That's where he meets Gollum, you know, this sort of creature-y thing, and almost ends up on the menu. Let's listen.
What is Baggins, precious?
I'm a hobbit from the Shire.
Oh, we like goblins, bats, and fishes, but we haven't tried hobbitses before. Is it soft? Is it juicy?
Now, keep your distance. I'll use this if I have to. I don't want any trouble, you understand? Just show me the way to get out of here, and I'll be on my way.
Gollum, of course, the CGI creature given life by actor Andy Serkis. We've spoken with him on the program. What was it like to see that scene come to life for you, a Tolkien scholar?
The scene worked surprisingly well. They did it pretty accurately, pretty close to the book, and Andy Serkis is just
amazing,
phenomenal with Gollum.
Well, but Mike Drought, we mentioned that while you liked the film, you had some reservations, and they had to do with the fact that this is Hollywood elbowing its way in, and how so?
The biggest problem for me is when Philippa Boyens, the other screenwriter, or Peter Jackson stop trusting their text and they stop respecting their audience and they think, no, what this really needs is not a dwarf and a goblin fighting, but 144,000 dwarves and goblins. That'll make it better. And sometimes they lose the tension out of a scene because it's so elaborated. Or Peter Jackson likes to film rocks flying through the air. He likes to film catapults. He likes to film rocks falling down, trees toppling over. And sometimes that actually got in the way of the story. It's just frustrating because I think it's a good film, but it maybe could have been a great film if they'd trusted their material more.
Huh. But still, good film from Hobbit scholar Michael Drought. We're talking about the film The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, the first of three to be made from the book. And Michael, we mentioned you're a Tolkien scholar, professor of English at Wheaton College, but also read and can speak a little Elvish. What should I ask you for here?
Well, I could end with the song that the elves always sing.
Please.
In The Lord of the Rings, but I'm not going to sing it. I'll just recite it.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
A Elbereth Gilthoniel, Silivrin Penemiriel, O Menel Aglar Eleneth, Necharid Palindiriel, O Galad Hremin Enorath, Fenulios Le Linathon, Nef Ayar Si Nef Eiron. It's a hymn to the quasi-goddess of the stars, not a true goddess, but a power, and the elves love her, and they sing songs under the stars to her.
Wonderful. Mike Drought, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And by the way, to hear our 2005 interview with Andy Serkis, go to hereandnow.org. That his Gollum is back is the best news of the day. Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Please join us again here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.